Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the speaker seminar. Colin Daniels has lived experience and has provided support to other blind and partially sighted people to achieve their employment goals and reach their own aspirational outcomes. He was formerly a welfare rights officer with Action for Blind People, where he supported clients maximise their income and claim statutory entitlements. I'm pleased to say that I worked with Colin for a number of years during my time with the Macular Society, and Colin is their working age manager and has been working in charity for many years. I'm going to ask Colin now to tell us about himself, a little about himself, and the sight loss journey that he has been on. So Colin, welcome.
No, great. Thank you for inviting me along. I'm just everyone know, I'm sitting here not on my full state of going, as I did break my arm the other day, so I'm a bit woolly, so bear with me a little bit today. But anyway, my sight loss, I've been living with Stargardt disease since I was a wee boy, since I was 8, and I'm 51 now. So I've lived through sort of the state, went through the state school system. Never went to a school for blind and partially sighted children. I was very much encouraged by my parents to live as an effective and normal life as possible, which meant that I got to learn and understand technology and how technology can support people, and therefore and how living and help to live independently. And as part of independence came, you know, financial knowledge and how to look after people's benefits, or my own benefits to start with. I'm registered blind. I have been since I was 17. I was unemployed for quite a long time, pretending I was retired, because I didn't really have the confidence to get my own job and find a career. And then I found myself working as a trainee employment coordinator for Action for Blind People, and find out I had all these skills that I learned just by living life as a blind person. So I learned about benefit and how supportive it can be, and then how rubbish it can be all at the same time. What the benefit processes and claim processes were. I was homeless a couple of times through no fault of my own. It's just landlords taking their house back. So I got to learn that side of things as well. So really, through just from living life, really, I've learned an awful lot about benefit and how it can support blind and partially sighted people. And fortunately, I've got a way of explaining it to most people that could make it fairly simple to understand, because it's not a simple subject. It is quite complicated. So we've got not a long time today, but we've got a bit of time today just to go through some of the top level stuff. And then we can, and then I'll direct you in the direction of for people that can help you further, including obviously Devin and Simon.
Thank you, Colin. So what do you think is the main reason that people do not claim the benefits that they're entitled to?
Because they don't know they're entitled to it, if actually the main reason. The majority of sight loss is acquired later in life. So the majority of people are just a little bit older. And people are quite stoical, and they're very much, they're sort of looking at how their sight loss is impacting them day to day, not the bigger picture. And it's only you might end up having a conversation over someone with a cup of tea, or someone say, "Oh, have you thought about attendance allowance?" And then that's what opens those doors. So it's actually like a lack of knowledge of the benefit system, which stops people claiming. There is a little bit about people, "I've never claimed a benefit in my life, so I'm not going to start now." But my argument with that always is that if you paid in, especially if you are that bit older, you've paid in all your life, then in fact, you have an entitlement to get something out of it. And we can't deny the fact that it does cost more money to live with an additional, with an initial illness and disability, like significant sight loss.
Absolutely, and I think probably most of our callers to the call today will back that one up, Colin. I mean, one of the things that I know from my time of working through sight loss, my journey in sight loss has been 15, maybe nearly 20 years now, that people have a fear of an invasion of their privacy, that they have that underlying concern that they're going to tell the Department of the DWP something that they would prefer them not to know and think that it's going to make an impact on their benefits. So can you run us through the benefits that people are entitled to claim?
I think it's important to start off with saying that actually the DWP don't actually care an awful lot about you at all. When you start claiming disability benefits, it's very much focusing on an area of your life, a particular area of your life, and just telling them one thing. Their computer systems aren't clever enough for one thing to tell the other one something else. They just don't keep up with each other. But the main benefits that people can claim are for older people, that's attendance allowance and pension credit, and those two things are related. And then there's for working age people, we have personal independence payment and carer's allowance, if you want to go down that route, but that's a complicated benefit, so we'll touch on it, but it's always worth getting good advice around carer's allowance. Universal credit is the biggie these days. Most of the what would be described as in-work benefits, so if you were supposed to be in work but not, all those things like income support, employment support allowance, and all those things are popped into universal credit, unless they're contribution-based, which are where you'll get something called New Style employment support allowance and job seekers allowance. But there's nobody who's blind or partially sighted that should be claiming job seekers allowance. They should always be on New Style ESA or Universal Credit, in my opinion. So they're the biggies, really. So for older people, that's attendance allowance and pension credit, which kind of go hand in hand. Personal independence payment for working age people. Carer's allowance, which has some very strict rules, a bit complicated. And then Universal Credit, New Style Employment Support Allowance and Job Seekers Allowance.
So what makes carer's allowance so difficult, Colin?
Because it depends on the income of the person claiming the benefit. And then it's sort of, so the person that's claiming the benefit can't be earning, have an income of over £134 a week. And if they do, they won't get any money, even though they'll get what's called an underlying entitlement. But if somebody is living on their own, especially if they're a bit older and with pension credit and they're getting disability premium as part of their pension credit and somebody claims carer's allowance for them, that person will lose their disability premium. So it's always worth just getting some good, strong advice and around carer's allowance before making a claim.
Right. That sounds very complicated. That says to me that it's all designed to stop people applying for these benefits. Do you agree?
No, I think it's designed to make sure that people are getting the entitlements that they're entitled to. Some of these benefits are legacy benefits, what are known as legacy benefits, so they're a bit old hat. It's about getting the right benefits at the right time. And making sure that people are getting the right amount of money to live on. Now, sadly, it's always a bit too little. The money is too small. So for example, if you're an older person living on your own, your minimum pension guarantee is £201 a week, which isn't an awful lot of money. And if you're a couple, it's £304 a week. But if one of you has sight loss and you claim attendance allowance, that can go up to that you'll get an additional £63 a week on your minimum pension guarantee. And then the attendance allowance payment on top of that. So attendance allowance is a really good benefit to claim if you're a bit older because it is what's called a passporting benefit, and it can open the doors to other benefits. And because pension credit, for example, is an income-related benefit, that could then open the door to further benefits, things like a bit of council tax relief, a bit of housing benefit, that sort of stuff.
Ah, so things have actually changed quite considerably across the last few years.
They have, yeah. They've not changed an incredible amount. It's just that the problem that people are having with them is that the population is getting older. Everyone's getting slightly more stoical when it comes to claiming benefit. And that thing that we don't talk about, the pandemic that happened 2 years ago, really made a backlog in all benefit claims. It slowed everything up considerably. And people were getting turned down quickly, and then not reapplying or not challenging the refusal of the benefit. And then people were getting turned down and go, well, I knew I didn't get it, so I won't bother doing anything about it again. So it's about getting the right support from the right people at the right time to claim, to make an effective claim.
Yes, yes. So we know from the callers who call into the helpline when we're talking to them about are they claiming all the benefits that they're entitled to, and we are advising them that, of the agencies that provide this advice, and we are giving them telephone numbers to call. We know that there's a general confusion, and I think it is confusion, around what the benefits are there to do. So how are they meant to be used? So can you just outline, Colin, what they're meant to do?
Yeah, I think this is a big thing, actually. People feel that the benefit, I mean, personal independence payment and attendance allowance, if we talk about those two, because they're the biggie, the two biggies really for people with blind and partially sighted people. They are there to pay for the additional costs of living with your sight condition. And who's to say what that is really? I mean, living with sight loss does cost more money. We know that. All you have to do is think about taxis, for example. I mean, I get more taxis than most of the people I know. Just purely and simply because it's easier. I haven't got a car. They won't let me drive for some reason. I spend a lot, and I'm not very good at cleaning, you know. So if I want my house to look a bit tip top and smart as I do, I pay for a cleaner once a fortnight, and then a gardener when it starts getting, you know, when you can actually sit in your garden when it's not raining. So I get a gardener to come around and just clear up my garden. So it's those little things. I mean, but it's not just those things. We just have to accept the fact that life is a bit more expensive with sight loss, and it's to cover those costs, whatever they might be for you.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment. We do get people who say, well, you know, I haven't got any money coming in and I'm not able to buy that because I can't afford to buy it. But we always say, well, this is what your benefits are there to use for. It's if you need a piece of equipment, that is what it's designed for, is to enable you to make your life easier and to be able to buy those things in that will help you continue to live life independently.
Absolutely. And also with things, benefits like attendance allowance and personal independence payment, they take quite a long time to claim. And if you get make a successful award, you'll get a back date from the date that you made your claim. And you could end up with quite a good chunk of cash, which could end up actually helping you pay for one of those quite expensive whiz-bang bits of equipment that we all love.
Well, there's certainly a lot of equipment out there at the moment. You know, we have a relationship with Sight and Sound Technology Limited. It's a partnership, and we make many, many referrals to them. The technology is changing so fast, and there is so much equipment that is available that we struggle to keep up with what those changes are. But I do know that, you know, for really good quality pieces of equipment, it costs a lot of money. And yet the dear old iPhones and also other technology phones are able to give us quite a lot of apps that enable us to do what we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a lot of free stuff out there, but iPhones and Samsungs, you know, Android, Samsungs, the decent. I mean, they're very expensive phones. They're still sort of £800 or £900, you know. I couldn't live without my iPhone. I suppose you could argue that my Pip, for example, helps me pay for that for the latest iPhone.
Yes, exactly.
You know, even though I'm paying for it monthly, through Vodafone, other phone providers are available. So, I mean, I think from a benefit point of view, I mean, there are lots of grants and things that are available to people. Depending on your background, what you maybe former job. So there's a good old website called Turn to Us that has a grant search on it, and you can go and have a look, put your details in, former work, or if you're retired, for example, say maybe a nurse or a farm worker or something like that, and there might be some grant money out there for you from a very small charity that nobody's ever heard of. So,
lovely. Well, that's a new one for me, Colin. So we will ask the office to look into that and produce a fact sheet on it. So so that's turned to us, and we'll look at that. Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you. So tell me, is anyone eligible to apply for a grant?
I think the majority of people, we're talking benefit now rather than grant. I mean, anyone's entitled to apply for a grant. You could probably get turned down. But from a benefit point of view, if you have significant sight loss, whether you're registered or not, you should be considering applying for either personal independence payment or attendance allowance. So the difference between the two is attendance allowances for those people who are over a pension age. So that's 66 plus now. That date's always changing, so you have to kind of check it out. But and then anybody under pension age and over the age of 16 should apply for personal independence payment. And if your vision loss is affecting you to complete daily tasks, you know, every day throughout the day, then yet you want to be thinking about it. And one of the ways to try and highlight this actually is to write a daily diary. So when you realise that your vision is poor, it's becoming to impact on your day to day, and you know you're getting a bit more help than you used to, maybe using a bit more equipment than you used to, magnifiers, that sort of stuff. Just write it down. Write a little list. You know, what the job was, what you did, how long it took, did you get any help, did you use a piece of equipment? And if that starts to really, if you start to notice that really starts to fill up on a daily basis, then that's the point to start thinking about applying for the benefit. And what you can do with, of course, with that daily diary is you can use it as a way of evidencing your claim when you make your claim.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. And that's certainly one that we'll start to tell people about because, as I say, it hadn't occurred to me to do that. That's valuable, Colin. Thank you. So if somebody wanted to apply and if somebody wanted to know whether they were claiming the right benefits or the right amount of benefits, so you know what are the restrictions around being eligible for a particular allowance over another one, how would somebody go about checking whether they were eligible?
Well, I always if you're a bit older, I would always recommend having a chat with your local Age UK service, whoever that might be. Age UK are spread out all over the country. They're all individual charities under the umbrella of Age UK, but they all seem to have, or the majority of them seem to have, a welfare rights department. And they will do what's called a benefit check for you. And they will help you apply for any benefit that they feel there might be a gap.
And do you think they're a good agency, Colin? I mean, do you recommend them?
Because I'm a little one-man band in the Macular Society, I'm forever directing people into Age UK if they're a bit older. So RNIB also have a benefit checker on their website now, which is pretty good, pretty straightforward to use and accessible, which is always beneficial. So if you Google RNIB benefit checker, you can pop all your stuff into there. Turn to us again. The other part of their website is a benefit checker, but it's just a little bit more clunky. It's a bit more complicated to use. So maybe just use the RNIB one. I think it's beneficial to use theirs. Or just speak to people like yourselves, your local societies. You can always give me a call. I'm always happy to do a benefit check over the phone. I don't need to know the ins and outs of everything. It's all about chunks of money at the end of the day. It's not about how much money you've got. It's about what chunks of money, what types of money you have, what your income is. And then we can work out if there's any gaps. And things like personal independence payment and attendance allowance, of course, are non-means tested. So yes. It doesn't really matter how much money you've got. You can have millions of pounds in the bank. If you're entitled to it, you're entitled to it. So that stops a lot of people, I think, making claims, going back to what you mentioned before, because they don't think they're entitled to it because their income is too high.
Yes.
Now, if they were claiming benefit, you know, in work payments, benefits, things like job seekers allowance and universal credit, then yeah, that is means tested, and what your income is will be impacted. But things like personal independence payment and attendance allowance they're non-means tested, so you're either entitled to them or you're not.
Okay, so when you get granted, when you're successfully granted one of the benefits, Is it time limited, Colin? Is there a time that you get allocated this?
Yes and no. So for personal independence payment, if you're registered as severely sight impaired, you'll probably end up with quite a long award. So you might, and it, for a first claim, you might find yourself with a 3 to 5 year award, and then there'll be a very quick renewal process, and it is brief as well. It's just a simple form. Has anything changed? Yes, no, tick, tick, sign, off it goes. And then you'll get it through. There's no such thing as an indefinite award anymore. But you will get it for an extended period. So the majority of people that I know of with who are on PIP at the enhanced rate and are registered as severely sight impaired have a claim that's going to be looked at again when DWP deem it's necessary. It's worded really badly, but it's kind of worded in that way. We'll check out. We'll catch up with you at some point. It's kind of what they say, because we realise your vision isn't going to get any better. As for attendance allowance, generally, in my experience, most people who get attendance allowance get it for a good chunk of time, and most of the time that they would expect that person to the benefit to outlive the person, if that's a delicate way of putting it.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. So if you apply for one of the benefits and you're refused, is there an appeal process?
Yeah, so there is, and it's always worth appealing, because 70% of people that go to appeal win. So the process is quite simple. When you get to your award letter, whether you're successful or not, it will say, if you disagree with this award, then you need to do what's called a mandatory reconsideration. So let's just say you get turned down. And so what you'll do is you'll ring me up, or you'll ring AGK up, whoever's helped you do your attendance allowance form, for example, and just say, look, I've been turned down. And they will add some further information, send some more evidence, and they'll send it by letter. There's a form you can fill in. I never bother using the form. I just write a letter generally. And I tend to explain where I think they've missed the gaps. And then we send that back off, and a few weeks later we get a letter saying whether they agree with it or not. If they just to continue to disagree and say, well, you're still not entitled to this, that's the point where you can go for tribunal, you can go to actual appeal. And then what we do again is we write a submission to the tribunal service, which is actually part of His Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Service. It's subject to massive delays at the moment, just because it is. But it's always worth appealing, always. And I have found actually with whoever supports you with an appeal, because you shouldn't really do that on your own. You need some professional support doing that. Whoever writes the submission, we tend to get a phone call at the moment from DWP querying why we think that the person should be getting it, and they have been turning it around quite a lot, I've found, without actually going to appeal. But you have to start the appeal process. But as I say, 70% of people that go to appeal win. So it's always worth thinking about it.
It is, absolutely. I know from personal experience, when my father was applying for his attendance allowance, he had somebody from the council came and interviewed him and helped him fill in the form, because he was quite elderly. But it transpired that the benefits advisor had to say to him, you're not thinking about the questions in the right amount of depth. And a good, for instance, was he asked my father if he could get to the toilet? My father said, oh, yes, got no problem getting to the toilet. And he said, actually, Harvey, what I'm saying to you is, if you were in the middle of Southampton, would you be able to get to a toilet? And he said, well, no, because I wouldn't know where it was. He said, exactly. Don't get tripped up by the question.
Yeah, I think the thing to do is that what I always talk about this. It was just about evidencing your claim. Okay. Going back to that daily diary I talked about, it's a good way of evidencing the claim, because what you're doing is you're identifying areas that, of your life that you're struggling with, and you're able to write them down. So if you write a list of I can't do this, the decision maker is just going to add so what. But if you say I can't do this because my sight loss impacts on it, and if I try this happens, then you're evidencing your difficulties, and then you're more likely to have a successful award. And then just to go on from this, people never ever talk about your worst day, and the reason I say this is because if you talk about your worst day when you're making a benefit claim for personal independence payment or for attendance allowance, you're committing fraud, because your worst day might be once every 4 months. But if you look at your daily diary and how much you actually changed, and you put your coping mechanisms in and the support that you're getting from other people, and then think about someone with average sight and the fact that they're not getting that, you're generally having a bad day when you think you're having a good one.
Yes.
And so, yes. And it's more consistent. That the amount of people that I've, who said, well, I won because I talked about my worst day, and then they'll question them further. And actually, they haven't talked about their worst day. They've just talked about their life, because that's what they do every day. It's just that we don't think about what we do every day, because we're living with our sight loss every day. So we're just accepting of the fact that that's the way we do stuff.
Yes, I can understand that. And I think probably the callers who are on the call this morning will identify with that. So, Colin, if there was one thing you'd like our callers to do today, what would it be?
Have a think about if your vision loss, your sight loss is impacting on your day-to-day, every day, throughout the day, with all sorts of different tasks, whether that's, in the kitchen or putting your makeup on or shaving or walking outside. Have a think about whether you're entitled to make a claim for PIP if you're under pension age, or attendance allowance if you're over pension age, and have a real think about it. Get some more advice. Write that daily diary just to sort of really reinforce it in your head that you're entitled to this money. We're very fortunate in the UK. The benefit system's there to be used and utilised, and when it works beautifully. When it doesn't, it doesn't. So, and that's why you've got people like me that have to sort of help.
Yes, I must admit, I do know across the years that it has got easier. And the having to turn up at one of the local unemployment offices and meet with a representative of DWP no longer takes place, which I think is a blessing in disguise, because people getting to those appointments were finding it very difficult and struggling. So it's good to hear. And I know you've always been positive about people applying for benefits, Colin. That's why when we wanted to raise this subject, I did think of you, because I think you've used your benefit to the maximum. And that's really what we want our callers, our clients, if you like, to be able to do is to
supported thousands of people over the years with claiming benefit, whether it's directly with one-to-one support or through podcasts or webinars or things like this, or phone seminars, over the years. It's all about confidence at the end of the day and getting the right support at the right time. And I think the daily diary is a really good way of emphasizing your difficulties to yourself, because yeah, that's the problem with this. Claiming for some of these benefits is horrible, and it's about you being honest with yourself and the form, which is sometimes the hardest thing to do.
Well, it is, because I know that when you start to look at what you can't do, for my father, it was a real wake-up call, because he said he didn't realise that he had been restricted in the way that he had been, and that he wasn't able to do. There was so much that he wasn't able to do anymore, and he said it actually made him quite depressed overnight, thinking about what he'd said on the form. And when he was filling it in, he kept going, and I felt for him, because he had to admit that he couldn't walk very far. He had to admit that he had to ask people for help. And yeah, when he started to write all these things down, as you say, it became very evident that his life was not on hold, but I think he thought his life was on hold.
Yeah, it was different, wasn't it? Sometimes yeah, difference doesn't
work. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've whizzed through our questions very early, callers. We're just going to unmute the lines that we've muted, that we knew that we could mute, and I'll be opening up for questions for Colin very shortly. Graham's just dashed off. This is a nice way to use our CEO. He's just dashed off to unmute the lines.
Cool.
Okay. Keep talking, Colin. We're there now.
I think it might be just beneficial just to quickly talk about personal independence payments. It's a really good benefit. It's based on these things called descriptors, and there's a couple of descriptors that are really beneficial. There's a descriptor, an activity called identifying signs, symbols and words, which is reading to you and I. And if you score points against these descriptors, and I think that the majority of blind and partially sighted people, because they use an aider and a magnifier, will score 4 points. And you only need to score 8 to get on standard rate and 12 to get on advanced rate. And if you're like me, and if you need someone to read for you or an electronic device to read for you, you'll score 8 points. So what you get on the standard rate of the daily living component in one descriptor alone. So you only got to find 4 little points from somewhere else to get that enhanced grade.
Sorry, Colin, I'm just going to interrupt you. We've got somebody on the call who's making quite a lot of noise in the background. Could I just ask if you could mute yourself at your end? Lovely. Carry on, Colin.
Yeah. The other two questions in the daily living component, which are really useful for blind and partially sighted people, are the kitchen, preparing a simple meal. Now, the majority of us, I would suggest, will either use an aid or an appliance in the kitchen, maybe a magnifier, additional lighting, or somebody else. And depending on how you explain that, so it could be with things like reading sell-by dates, checking things are cooked properly, reading cooking instructions. I use Seeing AI to read cooking instructions. If you scan the barcode now, on the barcode scanner as part of Seeing AI, some of the barcodes have the cooking instructions embedded now, so you can get Seeing AI to read them out. Another useful trick. And that's for either 2 or 4 points. And then the other one is mixing with people. And I know we used to talk about this a lot at the Macular Society tests around people feeling that they couldn't see people's faces anymore and how disturbing that is. I've certainly used to find that. So mixing with people, there's a descriptor called mixing with people or engaging with others. And there's a bit of government legislation that basically says that in a social situation, if you can't mix with other people and you need support to do that, you'll score 2 points. So just in 3 descriptors there should be enough points to get you on the standard rate of the daily living component. And then the mobility component, if you need support to find your way around an unfamiliar area, which is what I would suggest most blind and partially sighted people do. If you go somewhere new, you go with someone, then you'll score 10 points. So you'll get on the standard rate of the mobility component. So with the right support and that daily diary helping you with evidence of the claim, then you should be quite successful.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, what you said about scanning barcodes, you don't think of sell-by dates on foods when you're actually filling in your form, but, you know, preparing that simple meal and knowing what you're using is current and in date is very valuable. I wouldn't have thought of that. So thank you, Colin.
Yeah.
So lovely callers. Who would like to ask a question? And we just bear in mind that we won't talk over one another, but please ask your questions of Colin.
Hello, Colin. That was wonderful. Thank you very much. It's Karen here. Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, hi, Karen.
Yes, hi. I'm retired, have state pension and pension credit and PIPs. And PIPs I began because I'm disabled way back, you know, at least 10 years ago. So before I retired, I was getting PIPs for disability. And then when I, my sight loss began, which was 2 years ago and is rapidly happening. I'm registered severely sighted now. Most probably I will go on to be registered blind. I rang up the RNIB, spoke to a lovely person who seemed to have all my records, everything I was getting within the clicks of a button. And I said, should I, you know, tell Pips that I'm now registered severely sighted? And she said, well, Karen, it turns out that as it works, if you are making a new claim, you'd only get, and I think it was £360 then, it was 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, something like that. And she said, that's the amount. They don't go over that. But if you've already got an existing claim, and the amount I get is a bit more than that, she said, just leave it. I shouldn't rock the boat because, if you begin a new claim again, they might actually take money off you and put you back onto this 300 and whatever it is.
I mean, it's good advice. The thing to remember with PIP, so if you claim PIP before you become of pension age, you will remain on PIP, okay, when you pass pension age. So it really does depend on what levels of PIP that you're getting. So if you're on the enhanced rate of the daily living component, then it's pointless doing anything with it because there is nowhere higher than that. You're on that money for that money. And if you were on, let's just say, I don't know what levels you're on, but you are unable to claim, do a change of circumstances on your mobility component of your PIP claim. Because once you're of pension age, the mobility component, even though it stays in payment, will stay at the same amount. So if it was a standard rate, it will always remain a standard rate.
Yeah.
And that is because there is no mobility component within attendance allowance. So it helps the benefits marry up a little bit. So my suggestion would be, yes, to leave it well enough alone. They don't need to know everything.
They don't know anything about my sight loss.
What daily living rate you're on for PIP?
Oh dear, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to go and sort it out and look into it and everything.
Yeah.
I get about £500 a month. So that's which I think is going
on,
up. That's my PIP.
Yeah,
so I don't mind saying that. But
that tells me that you're on the enhanced rate of daily living and the standard rate of mobility, I would think. And because you're on the enhanced rate of daily living, then that's the only bit that would be affected. And because you're already on the higher rate, it doesn't go any higher.
So I
with the RNIB advisor, I would suggest to leave it well enough alone.
I know. Thank you. The other thing I needed to ask was, if there's a time, and because my central vision will go soon, my whole central vision, because I'm also disabled, I've looked into getting agency care come in. Now, in this area, and the one that the social services have suggested, was £20 an hour.
Right.
And so calculating, I'm kind of thinking, and as well as that, I get taxi cabs down to Morrison's. They drop me at the front door. The same taxi cab will bring me home, carry my shopping in. So they're wonderful, and but that's, you know, £22 a time. So if I did that, or if I go to town to go to a group or something like that, or meet friends for a coffee, that again is £22 a time. So to also have care workers come in at £20 an hour, even one a day to help, say, with lunch or something like that, and do some cleaning for me, that's, you know, at least £100 or £140 a week, £720.
Yeah, well, that's that, doesn't it?
Which,
yeah.
So my PIPs is kind of completely gone, you know, and with me actually still needing money to pay for taxi cabs or the helper. So what happens when people, you know, really need carers? Is there a way to have extra?
That would be a conversation to have with, there is other monies through these things called direct payments, which help pay for things like additional care support and stuff like that, which is through your local social services.
Right. So is kind of like a claim, is it?
Yeah, well, it's a bit more complicated than that, but you have a conversation with them. They would go through your income, see where the gaps were, and work out whether there any sort of direct payment from the county council would be available, and what that would look like, and whether that would be in place for.
Because I know with the social services, they can be so, you know, they're so hard pressed for money. They tell you to look into charity. I mean, I've been through it with them, and that's who I got this final, you know, the phone number of this agency, which is a private care agency. I just wondered whether there was an actual government directive that says when somebody needs agency workers, it can be paid for if it goes beyond what they actually get from PIP.
The answer is sort of yes and no, because it's a very individual thing, and that would need to be looked at through the social services, through your social services. That's what it's for. They've guidelines that social services need to follow. They will push back on it a little bit because, as you say, they are a bit strapped for cash. But it's being mindful of. They need to be mindful of your situation as well. And for you to be just, you know, if you feel you need that support, then it's worth pushing back. But also, it's worth remembering as well that there are gadgets and gizmos and bits of equipment that can help you do some of that stuff. So it's a matter of it's upskilling yourself as well, or getting support to do that. So local society, community support workers, for example, are good at helping with that kind of thing. Age UK have some trusted people as well who can do things like cleaning and things like that, depending on your education service. So
I think you guys probably would have to pay them.
Well, yeah,
I don't know.
Again, it is about just when you're at a point where you need that level of support, the support is there. But it's about working out when that is. And that's working that out between yourself and the social services.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. That has helped. I don't need it at the moment, but I'm trying to manage also, you know, the journey ahead.
Yeah,
so I'm
absolutely
thinking,
yeah,
if I
yeah.
get to that point, will there be the help there, and can I access it?
And I would argue that if you use your local society, if you're doing insight here, to get some new sort of cycle skills involved, and speak to the sensory support team, get some support from them initially, as well as learning to with some new skills. I have no central vision at all. I have not had any central vision for 20-odd years, and I live independently on my own, completely. So just me and my guide dog. So it's possible to live. I know it doesn't feel like it or doesn't seem like it, but there are ways, and there's so much, you know, there's so much equipment now. And make life more pleasant. Some of it, most of it talks. Shutting it up is the problem, to be frank.
Okay. So has anybody else got a question for Colin?
This is Les. Can I ask something?
Yes, Les, please do.
Good morning to everybody, and thanks, Colin, for your address. It was actually very useful, I think, the way you presented it for me, because one of the big problems I had, which I think some people do, is this coming to terms with the changes that happen in your life when sight loss comes to you. And I've got RP, retinitis pigmentosa, and I likened it very much to the old-fashioned times when you had somebody winning the pools, which I've said before, and they say, oh, this won't change my life in any way. And that's absolute rubbish, because sight loss affects you integrally. And on the positive side, I'm getting PIPs, state pension, and I get a pension that I had when I worked for a council. But I just wanted to say on the positive side that having come to terms with it and getting to a point where I opted for a home visit from the DWP when I was having the assessment made for PIPs, and I think it was the best thing I did, because I got a pre-list of what their requirements would be for the gentleman or the lady who came, so that I had all the paperwork and all the things I needed to think about and the answers for ready. And that was very, very useful, because it automatically gave a little rapport between myself and the person. And the point that you made, I was actually pulled on. I started talking about something and the gentleman stopped me and said, look, I think you're being a little bit too literal here. You're talking as though you don't have severe sight loss. He said, the point is, he said, let's say you wanted to go to a particular shop in the high street. I put you in the middle of the pavement on that high street. Could you find the shop? And I said, well, no. He said, well, definitely then. He says, you have severe sight loss if you needed help and assistance to do that. He said, a lot of people tend to try and sort of paint over the actual severe terms and conditions that they're dealing with within their new lives. And I have to say, the person I had, lucky or otherwise, was very, very good. When they went away, it was about 6 weeks, and then I received the talking disc, and I could hear the person turning bits of paper, and it went into great detail about my assessment, what I was given a lot of points for, what I wasn't given points for, etc. And I have to say, they were one of the few agencies that actually recognised and had the facility to deal with my sight loss, as opposed to what most agencies do, is the minute they find out you're visually impaired, they send you reams of bloody paperwork. You have to sort of sit there, going through it, and then you're forced into a system of coping. And at the moment, I'm at the point where I reached the point where last year I was no longer able to do some activities independently, such as going shopping. I was able to cope at one point, and even using Orcam, one of the readers that didn't need to be connected to Wi-Fi, I still found it difficult with supermarkets changing every now and again where they put things. Changes in staffing made it more difficult, and there was a reluctance I found to give assistance a little bit more. And I decided to go for what the last lady was talking about, some assistance. And I, using an agency, an enabling agency, which is also intensive care agency in the local area, called Helping Hands. And the question that came to me was, essentially, somebody comes, picks me up and goes shopping with me and takes me by the elbow, etc., and stuff like this. And I hire a slot of time to do a specific thing. And that's flexible. It can be for the dentist, it can be for a medical reason, but I have a confirmed slot for the actual shopping. My point was on the review that when I had the claim declared, they said that it would be reviewed in 2027. Yeah. And the point I was making, or was curious about, was the same point that the previous speaker talked, was when it comes to that point, I've actually brought it up on my annual reviews with the agency, because every year somebody comes to visit me and asks me how I'm getting on, is the facility appropriate, is the people getting the appropriate training to help me with what I need, etc. And I brought up this shortfall in possible payments if a funding that I was getting was cut, because we're all not naive enough to assume that things are going to go up and up and up and up, but there may be a time when something gets cut. And I was pleased to hear, on the one hand, they said, well, when you get to that position, because at the moment I pay through my PIPs, we'll review the situation with you. And but until that time, they're obviously happy to take a contribution that I'm using from PIPs for that payment. So my point really was literally coming on the back of the previous speaker. Would I be right in thinking there is an alternative claim that I can make if the payment, if when the review in 2027 comes, says, well, we're cutting your payment to this level, but I still require what I've established as being relevant assistance.
Yeah, again, as I said before, it's about that's about a conversation with you and social services at that time. But if your vision is in progressing, and you know, the reason that you're claiming pitfall hasn't changed, the form that you'll receive in 2027 is pretty straightforward. It is it's very much like the other form, but it just says, has there been any change, yes or no? If you put yes, there's a place just to explain why, what has changed. It's a really quick form, and it's you know, the number of people that I know who've gone through this renewal process have all found themselves back on the benefit. So, you know, but it, again, you know, I can't say that for every, you know, it's going to be absolutely true, but if there is a point where you have a reduction in income, then it's just worth having a chat with your local social services team to see, talk about direct payments and stuff.
There is, thank you, because I've always thought it's important, the point you made, is to actually begin this trail, because I think with the computer systems the way they are now, talking to each other, which they do a little bit more, if you've actually qualified for one benefit, that actually can be something that another agency can refer to confirm, perhaps evidence, you know, the claim that you're making.
Yeah, there are a couple of computers that talk to each other. Not all of them, but there are a couple. But yeah, a qualification that you're off PIP or attendance allowance for HMRC purposes, for example, is quite useful.
Can I ask a very quick question? I am lucky enough to have been awarded a degree of consideration on council tax and housing benefit.
Yeah.
Does the rule still apply that when all the new paperwork comes in declaring any increase in my income, am I still legally obliged to go to the local authority and submit all the changes in the paperwork, whether it's rent, state pension, and or any other change in my income?
Theoretically, they should be connected. Everything goes up by the same percentage. So if you've got social housing goes up by the same amount as rent goes, so everything will go up in the same increments. So what should happen is that you'll get a letter saying what your new payment will be.
Yeah.
So as your PIP goes up and your pension goes up, your state pension goes up, and then your housing benefit and your council tax support will go up by the same percentages.
Yeah, I take the point. What I've been told by my local authorities is that I'm still legally obliged.
You should, I mean, yeah, you're obliged, but, you know, it's, the answer is yes, I try to tell them, but, you know, I wouldn't break my back over it. I wouldn't put it as a priority. I would do it when you get around to it.
Okay.
Because, as I say, everything goes up by roughly the same percentage.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're rapidly approaching 5:30. Has anybody else got a quick question that they would like to ask? Lovely. Well then, what I will say is that the next speaker event takes place on Tuesday the 14th of May, and that will be an introduction to the work of the iClinic liaison officers, in particular Tessa Williams in our area. She's looking forward to joining us all. So that will be, as I say, on Tuesday the 14th of May on the same number. So to just conclude, Karen.
Sorry,
yes?
Hello. If there's chance for a quick question, please, Colin. If my son wanted to be my carer, he wouldn't be living with me. And, you know, if he, at some point in the future, would he have to make the claim for a carer's allowance? Or would I?
No, he would make the claim.
This is where he can't do more than so many hours work per week.
The care he needs to provide is 35 hours a week, but that's not actually that long length of time. It's a weekend at the end of the day. It does depend on the money that you're getting for your pension credits. Your pension credit, it sounds like that you're getting probably the disability addition for your, as part of your pension credit.
Yes.
And if he claims carer's allowance, you will lose that.
Oh, right. Oh, that's good to know. Thank you.
Good question,
I know also, as I live alone, I get a certain amount extra.
You do. Yeah.
So that's why he couldn't move in with me. We looked at that. So thank you.
Right.
It's been so good, this talk. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you, Karen.
Sorry, Tessa.
No, yeah. That's okay. No, that's fine. So, so Colin, thank you. Thank you very much indeed for taking part today. We do hold fact sheets on benefits, which if anybody wants one, you can call in on the helpline number, which is the 013-928-7666, and we can send that to you or email it. But actually, I'm going to make a couple of amendments to it based on Colin's talk today, to talk about keeping a diary and things like that. So I think that's very valuable, and we will add that in.
Mm-hmm.
So we are here, usual working days, Monday to Friday, 10 till 2.
Sorry, Tessa, just to mention, can I ask, can the diary be a verbal recorded diary, you know, like a day journal that you record for those of us who can't write or can't use computers?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just do it. Yes, just make a note of your of when a task is you're getting support or you use a piece of equipment. However you make that note, it's purely for yourself. Someone like me, later, if you went all the way down to appeal, someone like me might use it at appeal process, as part of an appeal process. But purely, it's just for your benefit, so you can evidence your claim more fully.
Thank you.
Lovely. So a reminder that the recording of this will appear on our website in the very near future. It won't be today, but we get it on there as quickly as we possibly can. Colin, if you're ever in Devon, then you need to look Graham and I up at Devon Insight. We would love to get together with you and meet personally, but we're a long way from Norfolk, aren't we?
We are a long way from Norfolk, you are, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thank you, callers, for ringing in and asking your questions.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, everyone.
All the best,
thank
everyone.
You, Tessa.
Thank you,
Colin.
Thank you, Colin.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.